All right, good afternoon. Welcome. It's Brian Noonan in for Rowan Ann on 720 WGN. A busy, busy day. We're going to get right to it. We'll say hello to everybody in a few minutes. But we're going to be assured we will talk to Tom Skilling. We will cover what's going on in the weather. We're going to talk to Ben Bradley, talk about what's going on in the news. But right now, we go to Washington, D.C., where Andy Fields is the ABC News correspondent in Washington. And we know we've got some breaking news. Scott Pruitt has resigned as the head of the EPA. Andy, thanks for taking some time. Good to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me with you.
Listen, this is
a surprise a day here in Washington.
It definitely is, but is it really? I mean, maybe it's a surprise that it happened today, but a man can only endure so many controversies before he's got to go in every other position in the world. So are we really surprised that Scott Pruitt is gone?
Well, I didn't think the surprise is it took the president this long to actually make this decision. This has been going on for more than a year, and we're now up to 14 ethics investigations against him. It was just less than a week or so ago, less than a month ago, the president, amidst all these controversies, said, "I fully support Scott Pruitt. He's doing a great job." And pretty much ignored all the controversies. Not a whole lot has changed between a month ago and now.
I was going to say, nothing is really new. It's all the stuff we've been hearing, as you said, for over a year.
The only thing that's new that we saw was a woman holding her baby confronting Scott Pruitt in a diner somewhere or a restaurant in Washington, D.C., basically saying you should resign before the scandals force you out. apparently Scott Pruitt didn't listen to her, and his resignation was tendered today.
Yeah, well, let's go back over some of the greatest hits of Scott Pruitt's controversy, because there are a myriad of them. Let's start with some travel. Andy, where we at? We've already got the EPA Inspector General looking into him. For those who may have, forgotten in the deluge of news that's happened since all of these things happened, refresh people's memory of Scott Pruitt's travel problems.
In the first year, he spent $105,000 on first-class flights. Just imagine how many first-class flights you need to take to get up to $105,000. Because, first-class flights are expensive, but they're not that expensive.
Right.
They're, maybe $1,000, $1,500 at most. So that's a lot of first-class flights. And the reasoning behind it was that he said it made it easier for his security detail to protect him and keep those, the riffraff back in coach complaining about him.
Women with babies might come up and accost him at a restaurant if he doesn't have, if he's not traveling first class.
The other big scandal, of course, was him renting a room from the wife of a lobbyist who was doing business with the EPA and apparently getting a sweetheart deal on that room. We subsequently found out that he wasn't actually even paying his bills and they were trying to get rid of him. We also found out from other aides that worked for Pruitt that he asked them to use their own credit cards when booking hotels for him, and sometimes they didn't get paid back.
Right, never reimbursed him.
Yeah, these are just a few of the things here. He asked an aide to get him a used Trump hotel mattress. He had used his connections to help his daughter get into law school, though pretty much everyone tries to do that. I'm not quite sure that's that much of a scandal.
I was going to say, that's not very scandalous. That's anybody with a connection is going, hey, can you hook us up?
Tried to get his wife a high-paying job with his connections in the oil industry. Tried to get his wife a Chick-fil-A franchise. Spent $1,500 on fountain pens. 12 fountain pens. Those are expensive pens.
Those are expensive pens. It's probably wonderful ink. Best ink available. They're first-class pens for his first-class writing while he first-class travels.
This one's more funny than it seems to be a scandal. He made a point of eating at the discounted White House mess hall so often that he was asked to stop because it was cheaper.
Well, listen, you got to save money somewhere. If you're blowing the taxpayers' money on first-class travel and fountain pens, at some point you go, maybe I'll cut back and just have a quesadilla downstairs.
Go to Trump Tower and have that Taco Bowl, the famous Taco Bowl that the president likes.
The best Taco Bowl, Andy. There's no better Taco Bowl anywhere on the Eastern Seaboard. Let's talk about Andrew Wheeler, who is now going to be the acting administrator starting on Monday. What do we know about him? There have been reports that people think
he's a deputy administrator. He had already been confirmed by the Senate, so he doesn't need confirmation to be the acting administrator. But the question is he going to have to, or will even the president put his name up to be the full-time administrator? And that would require another Senate hearing, more questions about the EPA. And, you know, the president has said all along, and this is one of the reasons that Scott Pruitt kept his job, was that Scott Pruitt was doing exactly what President Trump wanted him to do, get rid of regulations, get rid of protections for the environment, for the air, for things that the president thought was slowing down industry, especially coal and oil, drilling, gas, that the president thought was putting a crimp in the economy. Environmentalists, of course, looked at it much differently, saying that by doing these things, you're not really helping the economy, but you're hurting the environment.
Well, it's going to be, as you say, Andy, a surprise a day coming out of Washington, D.C. That's why we're glad you're there covering it all. So this is kind of today, this news, of course, overshadowing all the Supreme Court conversations that the president's been having. And that's still on schedule to be announced Monday. So he's got now he's got an EPA administrator to find as well. He's very, very busy.
And then a big trip to NATO and then one-on-one with Vladimir Putin.
Yes, and then going to see the Queen. And, oh, man, he's got a lot on his plate. The president's going to be very busy. Andy, always good to talk to you. Thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. That's Andy Field, ABC News correspondent in Washington, D.C. Of course, the big news, Scott Pruitt out at the EPA. We'll talk a little bit about that with Ben Bradley and get some local things with Ben as well. And we'll do all of that after this. But first, yes, I almost slipped up, but I will not forget. We do have traffic.
Yes, we do.
We do have traffic. 100 events, 19 days, one epic food festival. Visit ctfoodbowl.com for the ultimate Chicago food experience this August. Let's go back to Ryan Burrow, who has some more breaking weather news. Ryan?
Yeah, we continue to track these storms in northwest Indiana. The National Weather Service now issuing a severe thunderstorm warning for Newton County, southern Porter County, southern Lake County, and Jasper County, all in northwest Indiana. Apparently, these storms could bring 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts, and the people in that area can expect damage to roofs, siding, and trees. Get inside if you can. Impacted locations, Rensselaer, Morocco, Kentland, Percy Junction, Thayer, Perkins, Conrad, Dunn's Bridge, as well the U.S. 41 Dragway. If you're on I-65 right now, you could see storms between mile markers 200 and 240. So be careful, and we'll continue to track those for you.
Thank you, Ryan. And yes, rest assured, we will keep you updated on any weather developments. Tom Skilling will join us after the news at 3:30 as well. But right now, we go to WGN-TV and say hello to the man who was tweeting relentlessly yesterday because he was so put upon having to work the holiday, the one and only Ben Bradley. Hi, Ben, how are you?
I think it was one tweet or two tops.
Well, one or two tweets. You know, Twitter tweets live forever.
Well, and you just got to show that you are working out there for all those people who might not be, you know, watching TV. You got
to—that's true.
You got to make them feel bad while they're out there drinking a beer, grilling a steak. That there are some poor suckers still at work.
And you had to work in a tie. I mean, you got Ben Bradley comes to work. He doesn't come to work in a bro tee and some cutoffs. You're all dressed up and ready to go.
Now, in fairness, the Cubs game went late, so I anchored in—I think it was a 9-minute newscast yesterday. So it wasn't exactly put upon.
Not like breaking rocks.
No.
But
no,
you were still there.
Yeah, I still had to wear makeup, which I think counts as a full day work for any man.
Yes, I believe.
Oh, well, then I'm a hard worker.
Well, you don't have to wear Violetta. You're on the radio.
I mean, it's just in general.
You choose to.
Yeah.
That's your thing. But that's all right. I don't know where to start today, Ben. We've got,
every day we do this segment, and every day we're like, we don't know where to start. There's just so much happening locally and nationally.
Right. Do we start with the weather, which is a huge story?
So it's been a big story for the last 24 hours or so. A lot of folks got caught in those downpours and the dangerous lightning that erupted right in the middle of fireworks shows.
Yeah.
In fact, out in Sheridan, Illinois, two people were struck by lightning while they were waiting for the fireworks to begin. Our Dana Rebick is out there talking with them. We understand both of those folks who were hit by lightning in Sheridan Ryan are going to be okay. One of them expected to be released from the hospital any time now. And then there was another person who was struck by lightning downtown as well. You know, it's a reminder that when we, you know, you heard Ryan just a minute ago give that severe thunderstorm warning for portions of northwest Indiana. I know when we were on the air yesterday afternoon, we were telling folks, hey, beware, because this weather can move in fast. You know, on these hot summer days, yeah, when you have very humid conditions, a lot of moisture in the atmosphere, these storms can pop very quickly. They can build very quickly. And you see the result, these severe storms with the lightning. So we've got a reporter covering that. Our Patrick Elwood is out at Ribfest in Naperville.
Ribfest plagued by the weather today.
Boy, those guys can't catch a break, can they?
You know,
so yesterday, they canceled Ribfest, shut it down early. And it was supposed to be the big fireworks show in Naperville.
Yep.
They rescheduled the fireworks for tonight. Pitbull scheduled to perform at Ribfest tonight. As the severe storms moved through there about an hour or so ago, the Ribfest organizers had to shut the gates. They said, we're temporarily shutting down, not confirming it's an all-day thing yet. They still hope the show will go on tonight. And I'm just getting word from our producer, Danielle, that they are just reopening Ribfest.
Well, that's good, because Pitbull doesn't put on his chains just to sit in back.
No.
He's ready.
You can't keep Pitbull down.
Mr. 311, Mr. Worldwide, he's coming out hard in Naperville tonight.
Yeah, although I don't recommend wearing the chains if there's lightning in the area.
Well,
Lord, and what do you know? Lourdes just popped out of her office going, did somebody say Pitbull? Somebody say Pitbull?
That's right. He's ready to go.
Lourdes introduced him at an event once, like 18 years ago, and she claims that he still talks about her.
Wow.
Yeah.
How is Lourdes not out in Naperville tonight then, like backstage, hanging with Pitbull?
I think Channel 7 sponsors Ribfest. It's
Subject. All right. Let's leave that alone then. I know you guys will be covering the Scott Pruitt story, which just broke about a half hour or so ago.
Right.
That is no big surprise, really, but except for, obviously, the timing. There's always a surprise in the timing.
Right. And we learned it by presidential tweet, as we learn so many things these days. The other national story with local implications. Today, the Health and Human Services Secretary said that the number of detained migrant children currently in government custody may be closer to 3,000. You'll remember about 9 days or so that they said the number was closer to about 2,000.
Yeah.
And 50. So there may be a couple hundred more kids than the government previously acknowledged. And here in Chicago today, for the second time in a week, a federal judge in Chicago ordered the government to release a child to their parent. This is a Brazilian mom who came into this country illegally. She sought asylum with her child, and the two got separated. The mom has actually been free for several weeks, but her 10-year-old son remained in government custody at a shelter here in the Chicago area, privately run. Those two, by order of a federal judge, reunited within the last hour or so. Our Julian Cruz has that story for you coming up this afternoon.
So you guys are going to be busy as the night goes on. And then another local story, the president of Jewel Osco has died at age 55.
Do you hear how he got his start?
Yes, starting out working the carts at 17, and has worked his way up to president of the company is an amazing story.
It is an amazing story. Sorry to hear of his passing, but to start literally corralling carts in the parking lot of Jewel Osco, and then to move on up to run the place. It's pretty remarkable.
And 55, so young, a brief illness they say, and he's gone. So you've got a lot to do. Plus the big story of the ringleader of that horrible viral video. That of the attack, the four youths who were attacking the young man. So that he was found guilty today and sentenced. So there's you guys are going to be busy.
Speaking of viral videos, there is a fun one that we're going to show you today on the news at 4 o'clock today. Did you see the Chicago police officers getting in on the lip sync competition?
Oh no,
they did a great job. You've got to see it.
All right,
for you today at 4.
Well, we'll be watching. Thanks, Ben. Always good to talk to you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Sounds good, bro.
Take care. All right, that's Ben Bradley. You can see him every day on WGN-TV News and hear him every afternoon with Rowan Anna. We've been going so fast, but we'll tell you everything else on the other side. Don't forget, in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to give you a chance to go to the Blackhawks convention. We have a four-pack of passes. But right now, it is time to go to the newsroom, 3:30 on 720 WGN. And with the news, here's Ryan Burrow.
Yeah.
It is raining. We'll talk to Tom in just a minute. It's Brian Noonan in for Roe and Anna today and tomorrow. Roe and Anna enjoying the rest of their holiday vacation. Keep listening after 4:30. This is very exciting. We're going to give you a chance to win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th through the 29th. Get your convention passes and hotel guest rooms today. Book online at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. So after 4:30, we will give you a chance to get that family four-pack of passes. Tom Skilling's appearance here, and his report is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And I know, as much as Tom is worried about the people in these areas, you live for days like this when the severe weather hits, don't you, Tom?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting to watch nature put these things together. You don't like to see anybody hurt from this, nor dealing with flooding. But, you know, it's kind of at the extreme end of the spectrum here when you start getting the kind of rains we had, say, last night and now tonight and this evening going into northwest Indiana. There may be some more cells that develop up to the northwest and come down and affect the city. It'd be interesting to see if this first batch has worked over the atmosphere to the extent that next batch that might occur between now and 7 o'clock won't be quite as extreme. But northwest Indiana getting hammered. I was just looking, Brian, at some of the rainfall totals, and boy, we've had 168 at Munster, 149 at Lansing, 121 Dalton.
Just this afternoon?
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. And 45 to 50 mile per hour winds in some of these storms.
That's not fun on I-65, by the way. Those are dangerous stuff with those big trucks.
That is. And the good news is this stuff will be moving out in a couple of hours. But you know, it's kind of interesting. This is a summer severe weather setup. It's not quite the same as the spring one where you have these big bands of...
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you, Tom.
Yeah.
We're used to seeing, if we watch you and we see you show us the radar, it's a big swath of storms coming through. But the last couple of days, it's like popcorn almost.
Clusters.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Well, you know, part of it is the upper winds are lighter because the warming is more universal across the area. And jet streams form when you've got a big warm air mass next to a big cold air mass, and you get a huge batch of upper winds that can influence thunderstorms over wide areas. The winds aloft are very light in this situation, but we have high energy content in the atmosphere with all this heat and humidity. So what happens is these storms generate their own wind fields, but they tend to be more localized than what you get from a spring severe weather outbreak. The big thing about these storms is because they're slow moving and because there's so much moisture in the air, their rain producing capability is phenomenal. I mean, you know, you get stuck in the rains here, and they really come down. There were there were spots near Beecher last night that had over 4 inches of rain, and so there have been some big amounts of rain in the last 24 hours, but they tend to lay out in rather limited areas. O'Hare, while the Beecher area was getting 4 inches in spots, had a hundredth of an inch, and that was it.
Yeah, it was. We were out in the south suburbs last night picking up the dogs from my mom's house.
Yeah.
And it was pouring. Like crazy.
And lightning.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, insane lightning. It rivaled the fireworks on 294 last night coming home. But
you know,
then I got to my house and there was almost nothing.
It's true. And I got a lot of pictures from folks. So we sent these phenomenal pictures anymore on social media. And I can't remember a 4th of July where we married fireworks displays with natural fireworks. All going on at the same time. You had these incredible fireworks, and then there were these lightning bolts going on in the background, so you kind of had everything firing at all cylinders last night in terms of visual effect. It was quite amazing.
I want to ask you about lightning, because there were multiple reports last night, tragically, of people getting hit by lightning. That seems very uncommon nowadays, and maybe I'm wrong, but is it just because the people are up and there's nothing else around them? Is that what attracts the lightning? I'm very, you know.
Yeah. Well, lightning
when it comes
is,
to lightning.
That's a dangerous phenomenon. Lightning in a few, fractions of a second will produce heating in a narrow column of air, usually a couple centimeters across at its core, that's about 10 times the temperature, 5 to 10 times the temperature of the surface of the sun. It heats the air through which it passes to 50,000 degrees. But it's kind of a flash thing. I think what's happening, and we've had a lot of lightning strikes, is because these rains aren't occurring for hours on end, and they come up all of a sudden, folks are outdoors. You know, they'll tend to go inside if it starts raining, and the storm's approaching with rain ahead of it. But when these storms creep up on you and come in suddenly with big bursts of rain and so forth, that then chases people in, people tend to still be outside. They haven't taken cover from the rain.
Right.
And they're more vulnerable to this lightning that's occurring. And you do not want to be standing. There's no position you can stand in, anything like that. You know, you read these crazy accounts where if you stand on one toe or something like that, you're not grounded.
Yeah,
it's just like when cars are struck. We had a story about a car getting struck.
Now, see, and I thought the old thinking goes that you're in a car while the rubber wheels, you're not grounded.
Has nothing to
nothing
do with
to
it.
Do,
that's
see?
That's a myth. You know, it's the same thing with that's on a par with this myth that Lake Michigan always prevents tornadoes in the city. That's not true either. But no, it has nothing to do with the tires. What happens is when lightning strikes a car, the car acts as what's called a Faraday's cage. In other words, the metal in the car takes the energy from the lightning and flashes it around you.
Oh, geez.
Now, if you happen to be touching metal in the car, you can still be injured by that. And so it's not a totally safe place to be. And the tires have nothing to do. This thing will ground it. The lightning bolt will ground itself, tires or no tires.
Oh, see?
You know, that'd be like saying if you wore galoshes or something like that, that somehow you, because there was some rubber between
the bottom of your
foot and the ground, that you're safe. That's not true at all.
Well, I got to get rid of my big platform galoshes then, because I put an extra 3 inches of rubber down there thinking I'd be safe.
Yeah, and you know, Brian, you tend to hold up lightning rods, I know, during these storms.
I always go out and practice my chip shots the lightning storm, because nobody else is out there.
Yeah,
it's perfect
exactly.
Time to get on the course.
Not a good idea.
All right.
Well, we've got to get you away from doing that.
Well, that's
that.
Why we talk to you, Tom, because you dispel these weather myths that most of us live with. And, you know, now I know, okay, I won't take the 9-iron out during the lightning storm.
No, not a good idea. You don't want to be the highest object. But on the other hand, you know, this notion that if you're walking between the buildings, you aren't going to get struck, that's not necessarily true either. You know, a tall tree around you or something like that doesn't offer necessarily protection. Lightning will follow the path of least resistance.
Okay.
You can go through the ground. It can hit somewhere away from you and come through the ground and zap you that way. You can be walking downtown and a lightning bolt will decide not to hit the top of the building or the lightning rods or protection system on those. It can come down to the ground. So the bottom line is, if it's thundering and lightning, you probably shouldn't be outside in it. You know?
Well, we are really, we're terrifying people now, Tom, and I think it's always fun on a Thursday to panic people, but it's also, it's smart to tell people, listen, it's when you say seek shelter indoors, you're not doing it because you're getting a kickback from the interior decorators.
No.
You want people inside for safety.
Yeah, because, you know, I worked with a doctor who is an expert in lightning strike injury. And she always used to say, you know, I asked her, I said, what about these notions that if you stand on one leg a certain way, you're not going to get struck? She said, I'm not even going there. You should not be outside. This is Dr. Marianne Cooper, who, along with an Australian physician, are considered two of the world's authorities on lightning strike injuries. She always said, it's interesting, lightning does not enter a part of your body and come out the other part. It flashes over you. And it can go into orifices like your nostrils or your mouth if it's open.
Which, for me, always.
Yeah, me too.
It's trouble.
Brian. I hear you.
So what are we looking at for the rest of the night? Is, you know, obviously right now we're focused on Northwest Indiana. Things are bad, but that's not going to last.
No.
A whole lot longer, right?
I think if we can get past 7 or 8 o'clock, things will be improving dramatically. Skies will clear overnight. The humidity will begin to drop. And there's just no comparison. The atmosphere will be in tomorrow and what we're in today. I mean, we've had dew points in the mid-70s. There's 2.6 inches of water evaporated in a column of air right now. That's about as much moisture as the atmosphere here ever holds. Tomorrow, by comparison, we'll have Northwoods-type air with dew points dropping into the upper 40s. That sounds nice. Beautiful air. It's the kind of stuff where there's no haze, kind of air in which there's no haze or
beautiful.
Anything like that. Yeah, and tomorrow night you can turn off the air conditioner. Well, you can do it before then.
That'll be nice for a while. A couple days to get some fresh air in the house.
That's it. You can sleep without air conditioning tomorrow night and also... Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Nice. So how? So we're looking good for the weekend, because even though people were off yesterday, some are still off, but some people are back at work and looking forward to that weekend.
Going to be gorgeous. I mean, sunny to mostly sunny skies every day. It's just we've got a whole string of beautiful sunny days into next week. The heat will build back next week. We're going to another one of these authentic summer heat wave patterns that will be widespread. There's going to be a huge area of the country that's pretty hot, and we'll be in that area next week.
Okay, but we have a few days of reprieve.
Gorgeous.
And these storms, again, will be out of here by 7, 8 o'clock,
yeah,
you say?
Yeah, 7, 8 o'clock. I think that's a pretty good. If you're far south and far southeast in parts of northern Indiana, you may get a lingering storm to go beyond that. But for the Chicago area and our close-in suburbs, both in northwest Indiana and back to the west, to north, it's the party begins after this stuff pulls out, 7, 8 o'clock.
All right. Well, Tom, always appreciate the information. I know you'll have a busy night ahead of you, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thank you, Brian. Good to talk to you.
Good talking to you as well. That's Tom Skilling. You hear him with Roe and Anna here every day. All right, let's take, we're going to check in with Ryan Burrow and find out what is coming up at the top of the hour.
Scott Pruitt stepping down as head of the EPA. We learned it from a tweet from the president. That and more coming up at 4 o'clock.
And I know there are some traffic trouble spots. The one woman who knows them all is Violetta Padromedi. Yes, that's very exciting. Not that we'll be doing any canarbling, but, they'll be here. We'll talk about the fest. That'll be a lot of fun. Next hour is very, very busy. We've got Steve Dale coming in. He's got a beef. Steve's got public beef. There's a lot going on at Chicago Animal Care and Control, so Steve will be talking about that. And also, after 4:30, be listening, because we are going to give you a chance to win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th through the 29th. Get your convention passes and hotel guest rooms today. Book online at chicagoblackhawks.com.
Did you say Steve Dale's bringing us Italian beefs? Did I hear that correctly?
No, I said Steve Dale has a beef.
Ah.
Oh, it's going to be... It's like old school beef. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do, Brian? Listen to Steve Cochran tomorrow at 7:20 a.m. for your chance to win free 4-pack of tickets to the Blackhawks Convention. We're giving those away, too. It's Blackhawks Convention Ticket Symmetry. Catch it here on WGN. Oh, my goodness. Everybody's giving... You know the only person who's not getting those tickets? Me. We're giving them to everybody else. I'm the only one not getting them. But that's all right. It's Brian Noonan in for Roe and Anna. Now we finally have a chance to breathe. I get to say hello to Kevin and Violetta and Ryan. Nice to see you guys. We came out of the box hot today. A lot of breaking news and weather and traffic and all sorts of things.
I've got a 30th birthday party to get to in a couple weeks, and it's Hawaiian tropical theme, and I love that shirt. Where'd you get it?
This is a Tommy Bahama.
Oh, that's a big dog right
listen,
there.
I don't play.
I don't have that kind of dough to throw around.
Well, listen,
Hawaiian
sure.
Shirt.
Oh, come on. Of course you do.
Tommy Bahama.
You're a big afternoon sports personality on a major market radio station.
My management.
You save up.
So I need a strong Hawaiian shirt, and I like that one a lot because it's not like too crazy with a lot of colors. It's kind of simple, blue and white. Very nice.
Thank you. It's a little, it's muted, and the pattern is large, but the colors are muted. Right. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment. I've always enjoyed the Hawaiian shirt.
The good looks.
All the way back to high school.
I don't think I can really pull it off.
I don't think you can pull it off, no.
Leave
it to Brian.
Well, I have to. I don't. Thank you, Violetta.
Wow.
Well, she's right. I can't pull off a Hawaiian shirt.
It depends.
I can't at a Hawaiian-themed party, but I can't walk around everyday life wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Why not?
People will be like, why is that guy wearing a Hawaiian shirt?
People are going to talk.
Yeah, people are like, this guy looks like he shouldn't be wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Do you have one in the closet, Kevin?
I don't have one.
Really?
I don't think I've ever even put one on.
I've got one. I've got a Hawaiian shirt.
I may need a larger size than what you're probably rocking with, Ryan.
You can always go to Goodwill. You can pick up up an expensive one at Goodwill.
That's a good call.
You know, if you don't want to drop the major coin.
Yeah, it's a pig roast. Can get a little sloppy with the Mai Tais.
Old Navy might have something, too.
Sure.
I'm big on Old Navy.
You can find the Hawaiian shirts or the tropical camp shirt just about anywhere. Carson's is going out of business.
That's right. 60% off for now. I'm waiting for them to get to about 80% off.
Yeah. Well, that might
happen. Carson's ain't good. They have a whole Tommy Bahama section.
You might be able to swing over there and get something. All right, there you go. Well, listen, it's wardrobe help. That's what we do here on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. We help people pick out their wardrobes and get around town and do all sorts of things. We also give people the news in 2 minutes with Ryan. We'll do that on WGN.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I don't know who let the dogs out, but there were a lot of dogs and cats, all sorts of animals in Chicago Animal Care and Control. The executive director of Chicago Animal Care and Control, Susan Russell,
had been on the job for just over 2 years. She was asked to resign last Friday. She did not resign, so she was fired by the mayor. And now our very own Steve Dale is in a public beef. This is exciting with Alderman Alderman Raymond Lopez. And I will say at the outset, first of all, welcome, Steve. Always
thank
good to
you.
See you. We did invite Alderman Lopez to be with us today. He said he was busy servicing his constituents today, but would talk to us at another time. So, all right, you and I have talked about this for a while. What was the overriding issue at Chicago Animal Care and Control? Was it the overcrowding that people have said? Was it that they were supposedly moving animals to prevent them from being euthanized and kind of stockpiling them somewhere else? There's a lot going on.
So the truth is, to my knowledge, no issue whatsoever. I mean, Susan Russell, the executive director, that's the woman that was fired.
Right.
When she took over about 2 years ago, the euthanasia rate, let me put it this way, the live release rate, those are the animals that get out alive via rescues, via local animal shelters from other communities, and sometimes individual adopters come in and take animals out, was for cats in the upper 60 percentile, around 68% of cats, and about 72 or 73% of dogs. So that means about a third did not make it.
Right.
Now we are over 90% for dogs and cats that make it out alive. So if her job description is to get more animals out alive, to turn them over quicker, with a lot of help from a lot of individuals and rescue groups and all the rest all over,
she was doing a fine job.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what the city said, but yes, to answer your question, to my knowledge and understanding and experience, there really is no reasonable reason. And what we've done is we've hurt ourselves as a community.
Right.
Now, the city talked about stockpiling of animals. I'm not sure that I understand exactly what
isn't
they
mean.
Isn't
that what a shelter is anyway? A shelter is a place to stockpile animals.
In a sense, yes. I think they were saying there were too many too often. And I can address that. First of all, 15,000 animals come in annually.
Okay.
It's the law that if an animal shows up at your door, a dog or cat or any other animal, that you must take in that animal. And that's true not only for Chicago. Most municipal shelters, in fact, nearly all of them, all over the country, have the same thing.
Okay.
So they must take in all those animals. What are they to do with them? And when Susan tried to do things like reach out to the media,
mm-hmm,
her hands were often tied by the city. I can't explain why.
Okay, I was just going to ask, why would the city be opposed to that?
Don't know. But the city was micromanaging not only Susan Russell, but her predecessors, micromanaging Animal Care and Control, and maybe other city departments, I don't really know. But Animal Control I know about. And she is an expert in getting animals out alive, as it turns out, and animal welfare. The city department heads the city doesn't seem to be that expert in this. So how they can why they would micromanage, you'd have to ask the city of Chicago. But they did, and it tied her hands. And no matter who comes in now to be the executive director of animal control, the problem is 15,000 animals still come in.
Sure.
That's not going to change. And if the city ties the hands of the executive director on top of everything else, making things more difficult, I don't know how anyone can do a better job.
Well, we're going to get into why Alderman Raymond Lopez is on your radar and why
yes,
you have written an unbelievable piece today at SteveDalesPetWorld.com.
Mm-hmm.
People can go there and read it. But let's just real quickly address what you just said. 15,000 animals coming in. One of the alderman's proposals is to not take in as many animals. But going back to what you said previously, the law is if you have a municipal shelter, you have to take those animals. So it seems like somebody doesn't know what they're talking about.
Well, I heard Alderman Lopez say on Chicago Tonight, and you can go to their site and see it for yourself, people don't believe that he says this. So he said, let's change the law so not as many animals come in, and then we don't have overcrowding. Well, he's right. We would not have overcrowding. Where do all the animals go? So the problems are complex,
mm-hmm,
and I describe in my blog some of those, but what we need are safety nets. And in a way, Chicago has stepped up and provided some of that. Some rescue organizations are doing exactly that. There's a coalition of rescue groups that literally parks outside the door of animal control. As people walk in, they say, I wonder if we can help you. I wonder if we could provide a resource so you do not have to give up your pet. And that actually works, or at least say, I bet there's a rescue organization we can find. The animal doesn't have to go through the system, and we can get you right to that rescue group. It's amazing that this organization does that.
All right, let's we're going to get to all this because you have a lot of ways
layers?
That we can that we can make the city better. But let's go back to the alderman who had described himself as the dog alderman. He wanted to make Chicago a no kill city. This was going to be one of his big agendas. First of all, that can't happen, right? A lawmaker cannot make a city a no-kill city. But give me some of your history with the alderman and why this has become such a sore point between you and he.
Well, it's not between he and me, maybe, not the other way around. So Alderman Lopez was on my radio show a couple times on Sunday mornings,
right.
And we would go out to breakfast afterwards. And he had previously put forth a proclamation to make Chicago a no-kill city. And I tried to tell him because he was... concerned, I think, or confused about why so many animal welfare advocates were saying, all right, Alderman, we like the idea of fewer euthanizations, sure, but you didn't tell us about this. We don't know what the plan is because there was no plan, so we don't know how to go forward with this. And I said, why don't you bring everyone together and I'll do that for you. Bring all of these organizations and groups, all of the leaders in animal welfare, the veterinary leaders as well, important part of the equation, I think,
yes,
together in one room at the same time and kind of figure out a way to work this out.
Okay, now, that sounds like a great plan.
We did.
We're going to take a quick break. You're going to tell us what happened when that actually came to pass. All right.
People have to wait?
Well, it's a call to tease, Steve.
It is.
I know on Sunday mornings you got to cram everything in a minute and a half. You got like 8 seconds. You got to get everything out. Here we're going to air it out just a little bit. So Steve Dale is here.
I won't move. Steve, I won't even breathe.
No, stay here. Take a sip of water. Get fired up. First, we got to go to the newsroom and find out what Ryan Burrow has at the bottom of the hour news.
Crickets from Indiana's governor over allegations the state attorney general groped a lawmaker. That more coming up at 4:30.
Wow, that sounds like a trouble spot in government, but Violetta's got the traffic trouble spots.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new,
wow.
Pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Tom Jones. Very nice. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna. Steve Dale is in the studio with me. Susan Russell was the executive director at Chicago Animal Care and Control for just over 2 years, and then she was asked to resign. She would not resign, so the mayor fired her. And if you want to read a fascinating, detailed piece, because we're kind of glossing over things, make sure you go to Steve's website, stevedalespetworld.com, correct? Hold on. Wait a minute. There you go.
I can do that. SteveDale.tv.
SteveDale.tv. That's the one to go to.
Yeah.
SteveDale.tv. All right. So we were talking about Alderman Lopez from the 15th Ward, who, again, we invited to be here, but he was busy today, so he couldn't be here. So you said you and he had talked after your radio show. You were going to put together a consortium of sorts. Of people, of
experts. He called
experts,
it a work group.
A work group of veterinary leaders and pet people and animal people. So this group gets together. What happens?
The idea was to talk about some ideas as to how we could lower euthanasia in Chicago, mm-hmm, and how we could become what is called a no-kill city. Even though, incidentally, now, 2 years later, we kind of are. So everyone talks about Chicago, you should be a no-kill city. We are that. But the definition, in part, varies from community to community. But here's what I know, that right now we're at a 90% plus live release rate for dogs and cats. That means most of them get out alive, and some that don't have behavior problems, and some that don't are too ill, you know, and we can do better. Yes, 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 yes. But we're kind of there right now. Yeah, we're doing really good, considering the resources given to animal care and control. In fact, I think we're doing great.
Well, that's a pretty good number that you just cited. So the work group gets together, everybody's talking, things go, but you, the alderman, you don't think was really grasping what was going on. What was your issue with the alderman? Because you enumerate a number of them in your post.
I'm not sure, unfortunately, that he listened to experts in the room or took at heart what experts were saying. He had voices in his head, little people chirping in his ear, telling him. But, you know, when you have people that have worked in animal welfare for their entire careers and veterinarians that have worked for their entire careers and other people, a variety of people who have wonderful ideas, you can pick and choose some of those ideas and try to get done what you can get done. And there are certain things that the alderman who calls himself the dog alderman could have done to support animal control. I'll tell you, I was out to breakfast with him. It was 2 weeks, and I've not said this on the radio yet. It was in my blog, but it's the truth. Barely 2 weeks. Susan Russell is now in charge as executive director of Chicago Animal Care and Control.
Right.
And at that point, something happened, allegedly. I don't remember what it was, but he wanted to write a press release saying that this woman is inept or things are bad at animal control.
2 weeks into the job.
2 weeks into the job. And I said, why don't you, rather than have that perspective, try to help.
Yeah.
Let's make things better. Let's find out if there is something wrong. Let's find out what is wrong and fix it.
Right.
Rather than go the approach he's been going now for 2 years. So he's been very...
Was there, it begs the question, is there a personal issue between the alderman and Susan Russell?
I don't know. I mean, she didn't know him before.
Okay, I was going to say, it seems like there's some sort of...
No, there's no long history there at all. So I don't know what his, you know, so all this negative publicity that's been happening over and over and over and over. He even picketed with like five people. He even picketed animal control with signs, you know, down with Susan Russell, whatever the heck they were saying. There were only about five or six or seven people that showed up. As much media showed up. So I suspect he was happy about that. But I don't know what he was picketing. He said that she was killing too many animals. But our euthanasia rate is where I just said it is, which is in the no-kill territory. So a lot of this just leaves me confused. I will say that to my knowledge, he may be the only alderman who has been speaking out against her. But all this negative publicity, City Hall doesn't much like.
Right.
And she has stood up. Susan Russell, the executive director of animal control, to the mayor a couple of times, and our mayor doesn't like that and is more concerned about that maybe than about or the image than or the politics.
The sizzle than more a, than the
yeah,
steak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. And the fact that we're saving animals apparently doesn't much matter. I don't know. I don't understand it,
so
but it's wrong.
So where do we go? What's next? Not only, and again, you enumerate a number of things in the blog post, stevedale.tv, if you want to read this in its entirety, but just give a couple highlights. What can we do? Where does Chicago go so that this doesn't happen again or does not continue to happen?
Well, I think we need to do a national search to get a professional in there, not a political appointee. Chicago has a history long before Mayor Rahm of appointing people who have been politically helpful,
That's surprising.
It's a crazy concept.
Hold on a minute.
To hire a real expert.
Mm.
So we need to do that. That's first of all. And secondly, support that person who comes in. The city doesn't currently do that. I talked about how the city, and there are specific examples on and on and on I can give about how the city tied the hands of Susan Russell. Whoever the post-Susan Russell is, I hope the city doesn't do that. There are safety nets that we need to provide people, both financial safety nets, the encouragement of more spay-neuter. I enumerate them in the blog post, but we need to do better at those things.
All right. And people, again, we always say people need to go to these shelters, and other shelters need to help out Chicago Animal Care and Control by taking in some of their surplus animals, right?
So, Brian, smart thing to say, and it puts me in a corner, but I'll answer it. That really is a good question. So, other shelters in Chicago, some of them pull or take or remove no animals from our own Animal Care and Control. Now, they save lives, and that's a good thing. So, they bring animals in from other states. That's fine in a sense because we're still saving lives.
Yep.
Having said that, can you take a few animals from Animal Care and Control? And those that take a few, some of them can take more.
Okay.
That would help a little bit. We need to do that. We need to think of our own in Chicago.
Yeah. I know my last dog came from Kentucky.
Yeah, you know? And your dog is still a wonderful dog.
He's a wonderful dog.
Barks in a southern accent, which is a problem.
Sure, likes the moonshine, Steve. I got to tell you, we got him in the rehab because he's a little bit, he likes to go a little bit
that
crazy.
Kentucky bourbon thing?
He's just a lunatic.
Yeah.
Listen, it is always good to see you. People need to go to stevedale.tv. Read this entire thing. Your comments on Alderman Ray Lopez's statement on the firing of Susan Russell.
But it really is about what the mayor did more than that. But I've got news for you, actually.
Yes.
So on Monday, I think at 2:30, Susan Russell, so this happens before a July 4th weekend,
yes,
and a Friday afternoon.
Of course.
It's what our mayor does.
most mayors do.
Yeah,
most people
exactly,
do.
Exactly. And she was also on her way to London, a previously planned vacation, well-earned, I'm sure. So she hasn't been here to talk in the media. She will be on Monday. I believe WGN Radio will be her first appearance, and it will be with John Williams. If I'm remembering right, we'll both be on about 2:30.
Very nice. So that's Monday, and people can listen to you Sunday morning at 6:30?
Uh-huh. I'll be talking about that and something you're so excited about.
Dogs and pot.
No.
Oh, I want to know. I want my.
I know you wanted to talk about that.
We don't have time to talk
next
about
time.
My dog doing bong rips.
No. We're talking about the Meow Meetup on Sunday morning.
Hello.
It is a cat convention.
Oh, look, our own Jeff Carlin, very excited about the cat convention. He's
yes.
wearing a cat suit now, which is
scary.
It's
kind of scary
unsettling.
Anyway. Yeah.
Very unsettling. Well, always good to see you, Steve Dale.
Thank you.
Read Steve Dale's entire post, stevedale.tv, and listen to Steve Sunday morning and hear Steve. He's always around. You're always around. That's
always
the beautiful thing. You're always around.
They try to get rid of me.
But you keep coming back.
Popping back.
Like a
yeah.
bad penny.
Exactly.
All right, it's news time on WGN. This report is sponsored by Chicago Shakespeare Theater. A little after 4:30, but he's patient. It's Ryan Burrow.
I'm gone, just a small town dude with a big city attitude. Honey, are you looking for some trouble tonight?
I am always looking for trouble. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anon, 720 WGN. That, of course, Cher. Jesse James, one of the many songs that you will hear if you are smart enough to go to the Oriental Theater and see the Cher show. Wonderful show. One of the women who plays Cher, and we will explain why I say one of the women who plays Cher, you may have seen on Broadway in Finding Neverland, Wicked Jekyll and Hyde, and she is one of the Chers in the Cher show. Teal Wicks joins me now on WGN. Teal, thanks for joining me. I know you've got a show tonight, so we'll try not to stress out your voice too much.
Thanks, Brian. No problem at all.
I saw the show last week, first of all, and it was terrific. You were wonderful. It was a great night at the theater.
Thanks. That's really great to hear. That's all we want right now.
Yeah, it was one of those. It's fun. It's I grew up in it. I remember watching the Sonny and Cher show at my grandma's house when I was a kid, and I remembered all those songs. It was a lot of fun. One of the unique things about the show, and I don't think I'm spoiling it if we tell people about this, is I mentioned you're one of the women who play Cher. There's three Chers in this show.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're not spoiling anything at all. We're trying to be very upfront about the fact that there's three women sharing this role, sharing it. because Cher has just had such a prolific career and there are so many versions of herself that she just has lived through her life. So, it kind of takes more than just one gal to try to step into those shoes and bring this woman's story to life. So there's three of us trying to tackle at least some of it as much as we can, in a 2.5-hour Broadway musical.
Well, that's it. If you tried to do, her career has spanned over 60 years. If you tried to do everything, first of all, there'd need to be about 10 of you, which at one point, again,
yeah.
I don't think I'm spoiling anything, there are. So your version of Cher is titled Lady. What, for people who may not be familiar yet with the production, what part of Cher's career are you representing?
Yeah, so my character is named Lady. We all have the three Chers. We each have different names. There's Babe, Lady, who's me, and then Star. And Lady is pretty. I kind of take over Cher's storytelling from when her and Sonny are doing these gigs in Vegas and basically get picked up to start the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour TV show, which just was a huge shift in their career and launched them to a whole new platform of fame and brought them, to everybody's living rooms on a weekly basis and to people's homes. And I basically get to tell her story. Well, all three of us are sort of telling her story throughout, but my big chunk is Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour through the cancellation of the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour, when Cher starts her own solo show, just Cher, through her divorce with Sonny, through her marriage and split up with Greg Allman, And then I kind of, my storytelling winds down right before she starts to follow her acting career.
And yet,
a whole nother page in her giant book.
Just a huge chapters. But what I also liked is all the shares will kind of mingle. So you, even though your main storytelling part may be over at that milestone in her life, you still pop in later. You pop in before. All the shares kind of mingle and you all know that you're there. It's not like she's seeing a ghost. No, you acknowledge that the other ones are there. It's a really cool storytelling device.
Great. Oh, that's wonderful. It's the concept is kind of, you know, as people, we have so many layers to ourselves and so many versions of yourself. And sometimes you have conversations in your head with different versions of yourself, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. And in certain moments in your life, you might want to recall the younger version of yourself who was really hopeful and wide-eyed and kind of try to embrace that person to get through this one event. And then sometimes you really are reaching for that wise, you know, the person who's been through a lot and has the wisdom of how to get to the other side of some of these problematic or just big hills that we have to climb. So you kind of want to reach for that future self and be like, how do I get some wisdom? So the idea is that we're sort of there with each other to kind of step in maybe when one of the girls needs a little help to get through a certain moment, make a big decision, a big life choice, and she might need to call on all her versions of herself to sort of get the power and the wisdom and the strength and hope to step forward, if that makes sense.
It does, and it's because you do need to sometimes revisit your younger self and mm-hmm. you know, or as a young person, you were, man, I wish I knew what was down the road. So this gave baby the ability to hear from you and hear from a star, and so she got her advice. I think it was really good. And now, just so people don't think, oh well, it sounds like, you know, a lot of talking. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of interaction with the shares, but there's all the music. There's like 30 some share songs in this in the production.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And what I like too is
a lot in there.
And you use them, you didn't necessarily use them always in chronological order, which I liked. Because early in the show there were some later share songs and it was like, "Oh, okay, I expected just to hear the, you know, early stuff at the start of the show and then chronologically move up." But yeah, you teased us. You mixed it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a musical. So with the musical, you're not just doing concert versions of the songs. You know, the songs are they're devices for storytelling moments, and they're also devices of just, you know, in the moment at her point in her career at this point, she sang the song, and maybe we'll present the song where it actually happened in her life chronologically. But then we have some songs that are really lovely storytelling plot moving forwarding song. So we get to sing those in sort of more emotional, musicalized, theatrical ways. Because it's a musical, you know? If people wanted to just hear Cher sing songs, she's still touring. Right, she's still doing concerts.
Exactly.
Go see her.
You could go see it.
But if you want to see
the full version of the song.
Yeah. But if you want to see a cool, theatricalized version of her life, then come see our show.
Exactly. And one of the things, you know, Cher is known for a lot of things. One of the things she is known for is her relationship with Bob Mackie and the costumes. And if you want to see those up close, now, those were all recreations, right? Those were not the original costumes, or were they the original costumes?
No, they're all costumes that are recreations made and designed by Bob Mackie for our show. But a lot of them are based off of the real outfits that she wore throughout her career, even just some signature looks from just Bob's huge career on his own. So it's pretty, that's one of the very extra incredible things about the show is we all worked really close with Bob, and he is an incredible designer and such a wonderful soul of a human and just really understands. He understands clothing in a way that I didn't really know somebody could understand clothes. And he just
the way he designs things is so unique and so special. There's a reason why he's become this fashion icon.
It was amazing to hear the ovations when, not only for the performance, but for some of just the outfits. When one of you would come out in one of these iconic gowns that Cher had worn, whether it was the Oscar night gown or some of the other costumes, people went crazy just for the dresses.
Yeah. Some of these outfits literally stop the show. The audience goes wild for them, which is amazing. Yeah. And I mean, and Bob and Cher had such a unique relationship, and they just had some incredible moments. I mean, it's so funny, you know, fashion, how powerful fashion can be in a certain moment. And Cher and Bob really used some of these moments to really make statements with what she wore, what she did not wear, lack thereof, clothing-wise.
Yes.
And so we try to give at least a little bit of that back to the audience, because you can't tell Cher's story without having some of these iconic Bob Mackie looks, because they're just part of who she is.
Oh, yeah. It's synonymous with her, with the music and Sonny and Bob Mackie. I mean, it's all part of the package. Now, on Broadway before, you've been in, as I mentioned, you've been in Finding Neverland and Wicked, Jekyll and Hyde, all fiction. Now you've got to play Cher. What's the unique challenge of taking on a part of somebody who's not only still around, but still working, and not afraid to share her opinions about how she's being perceived or portrayed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a big challenge. It's something I've never taken on this type of challenge before, and it's very exciting. It's exciting because she is such a fascinating, strong, flesh and blood woman who... There's so much research that I've been able to draw on because she's around. She exists. She's been around for so long. She has so many amazing things. I've been going on these YouTube rabbit hole searches of Cher and Sonny and Cher and everything related to Cher. It's been fascinating. But still, you know, she's alive and she's going to have a strong opinion about what we're doing. And all we can really do is try to give life to the things that makes her so unique as a person and has made her such an iconic, long-lasting celebrity. Well, not just a celebrity, but people adore her. She's a huge fan base. And because she's spectacular, she knows how to put on a show, but she's also very grounded and has such humanity to her that I think what makes her so special is that she has a way of reaching to people thinking, it sounds like she's talking directly to you, and she doesn't have a lot of pretenses.
Right.
She's, you know, doesn't censor herself all that much.
No, and that's that was what I wanted to ask you about that, too, because it was big news that she came to one of the preview performances, and she gave an interview to Chris Jones, the Tribune theater critic, and, you know, had a lot of wonderful things to say about you and the other ladies who portrayed Cher and the cast and a lot, but she was very blunt about, well, there's some of the things I think they need to work on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the whole point of doing the show, having the opportunity to do the show here in Chicago, is that we, during the preview period, we get to make a lot of changes and really try out what the show is and make big mistakes if they're mistakes, and, you know, be willing to make big, bold mistakes and see how the audiences react to them and see if it works or not. You know, you have to be, it's tough to put together a musical.
It involves every performance.
Yeah. And so it's good that she has such strong opinions, and it's good. We've had the audiences have been really incredible here. And it's been so fun to see the audiences react the way they do. And the audiences is the best lesson that you have for a show. They will tell you what works. They will make it clear when something doesn't work. And so it's great to have this chance to just try it out and be hopefully bold and big if we can. And then, you know, before we start on Broadway, who knows, it could be very similar to this, or we could make huge changes. It all depends. All of our creatives, and Cher included, they have a lot of ideas, and it'll be interesting to see what comes next.
Did you know she was going to be there that night?
I did not know. I didn't know until Curtain Call, when we were doing Curtain Call, my other shares, Stephanie J. Block and Michaela Diamond, they said, okay, we have a secret, shares in the audience. And I almost fell on the floor.
Oh, man.
I knew she was going to come to the show, but I told everybody they couldn't tell me when she was. They could tell me after the fact.
Yeah, that's probably
because
best.
I would not have gotten through that show with knowing that she was in the audience. And she came back. She came back and saw a few more shows, which I think is a really good sign, because
yeah.
If she was not having it, she probably would have been like, okay, one and done. I'm good.
Yeah, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Well, people need to get over to the Oriental Theater. The Cher show runs through July 15th. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com. You can go to the Broadway in Chicago box offices. You can call the Broadway in Chicago hotline, but you need to go see the Cher show before it heads to Broadway. Teal Wicks is Lady, one of the three Chers. And again, Teal, you were wonderful. The entire show was great, and I think people need to get over. If you are a fan at all of Cher or Sonny and Cher, you remember the music and the dresses and stuff, you are going to have a wonderful night at the theater.
So, thanks, Brian. Yeah, come see us.
It was terrific. So have a great show tonight. Break a leg, and thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
You too. That's Teal Wicks. She is Lady. Ryan, what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news?
A Chicago fire player hurt in a hit-and-run crash today. That story and more coming up at 5 o'clock from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
All right. Violetta's got the traffic trouble spots. Thank you, Ryan. Brian Noonan in for Rokan and Anna DeFlantes. They are on vacation. I'll be with you again tomorrow afternoon. After 5:30, we'll talk to the folks from Mistwood Golf Club in Romeoville. They set a huge world record yesterday. Kevin will be in here. He's been out there golfing. He's, oh my goodness. This world record was right up your alley.
This is big.
It's huge. It involves one of America's iconic treats. So we will talk to the folks from Mistwood after 5:30. Looking forward to that. And then Richard Roper will be here after 6 o'clock. We'll talk about some new movies coming out and a new TV show, a limited release TV show on HBO. So a lot to talk about with Rich. We're out of here at 6:30 because of White Sox baseball. So we might as well just get right to this.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show. Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeFlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
I always feel like I'm being yelled at by the intro. The intro scolds me, and I'm always uncomfortable with it. And yet, it is time for the top five at five. So let's get started with, as always,
number five.
Oh, yes. A video is going viral this day after Independence Day. A video which shows a man throwing a drink in a teenager's face after apparently ripping a Make America Great Again hat off the victim's head and stealing it. 16-year-old Hunter Richards says he was simply eating with friends at a restaurant in San Antonio when someone got in his face. The man pulled Richards' hat off with enough force that he took some of the boy's hair with it.
Supporting the president. You ain't supporting s***.
Okay.
It's gonna go great in my fireplace.
All right, have fun with it.
That seems a little much. The man in the video has reportedly been identified as Kino Jimenez, a bartender in San Antonio, and he has now been fired from his job over the incident. Hunter says he didn't expect to get all of this attention.
I didn't think it was going to generate that amount, like the amount of like what people were doing. Like I was looking at the comments and some people were like, oh yeah, like this is uncalled for. And then people were like, you know, just mixed opinions. But I didn't think it would blow up to what it is right now.
Then why'd you release the video, my man? Listen, I don't support anybody grabbing anybody or anything off anybody's hand. But we were talking about this before, and it seemed almost as if there's something missing from this tape. I have a feeling, and I may be completely wrong, but I doubt it. I rarely am completely wrong. I may be mistaken. I think these kids were doing something in that restaurant before they. It doesn't excuse somebody grabbing a hat, but I got a feeling something else was going on there.
I wonder what they were eating. Some of the best food I've had is from San Antonio. Great enchiladas.
They were at Whataburger, which is a phenomenal chain down there. Whataburger. Have you been to a Whataburger?
I've been to a Whataburger in a Dallas airport. Yeah.
Not the same, though.
It's not the same.
No, you got to go to a Whataburger on the street.
Okay.
Just a regular, you know.
I'll fly to Texas and find a Whataburger.
Anywhere in Texas. Yeah, Texas, Oklahoma, you can find yourself a nice Whataburger.
What kind of patties are those? The thin ones?
They're thinner. It's like a fast food style restaurant.
Yeah, but they're not thin like if you go to a Euro place. They're not that paper thin. They're not
like Steak and Shake thin.
No, not Steak and Shake thin. I'd equate them to like a Burger King or McDonald's.
Yeah,
something like that. The Whataburger is about the size of a Whopper. So down there, of course, everything has green chili peppers on it. You can get the
green sauce on the enchiladas. I'll never forget.
That's anywhere in Texas and New Mexico. It's all green chilies.
Hopefully they can just share a plate of enchiladas and get on with this.
I would hope so, but now Kino Jimenez is out of a job as a bartender.
He's been shamed.
Yeah, sure he did. And there's a lot of bars in San Antonio. He'll find another gig.
Great town.
You can hang out by the Alamo, wander around the Riverwalk. It's very pretty down there. Good stuff. I went to one of the best steakhouses I've ever been at in San Antonio.
Was it on the Riverwalk?
It was a little dive joint just off near the Alamo, just on a regular side street. I got somebody pointed me in that direction. It was worth it. It's worth wandering
in. Good to know.
Yeah, listen.
I'll hit you up next time I'm in San Antonio. Yeah,
listen, Kevin, if you need a hookup in San Antonio, I'm your man.
That's good to know. You're the tour guide.
Listen, I've been everywhere.
Love it.
It's very frightening.
Number four.
Number four. Speaking of very frightening, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Michael Avenatti, has been suggesting the possibility of running for president. And why not? Anybody can. He's been talking about running for president of the U.S. in 2020, and he elaborated a bit on CNN. Jim Sciutto started off by asking what makes him qualified to run.
Well, I think I'd be qualified because I have three things that this president lacks, Jim. Brains, heart, and courage. And I think I have those in spades compared to this president. And I am deeply disturbed at the direction that this country is taking. I'm deeply disturbed by what's happened most recently with separating these mothers and their children. I think it shows a complete lack of compassion. I'm deeply disturbed about our place in the world. I think our allies are very, very concerned about where America stands.
So basically, he's saying he could be the president because he is an amalgamation of the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion. That's all you need? My dog has heart and courage. And I don't know about the brains. He's kind of a dumb dog. But so he's 66% there to run for president.
Put him up.
Yeah. Really? That's all it takes? Well, he didn't stop there. He had more to say.
How would you make a credible case to voters that you should be the commander in chief?
Jim, all of the experience in the world isn't going to be worth anything if you can't beat this guy. And I'll tell you this, I think that Donald Trump is an exceptional campaigner. I think he has very good political instincts, and I think he should not be underestimated. And if you want to know how he stacks up against traditional politicians with long track records and long voting records, all you have to do is look at the 15 That's not one, that's not two, 15 candidates that he beat on his run to the White House.
All right, so one and two are not 15. So he does have the brains, because he just pointed out that math problem. He solved the complex math problem. So he's got the brains. Are we going to hear in the next clip that he has heart and courage? Is that how we're going to? All right, let's find out. I don't know.
Bottom line here, Jim, is if he is reelected, this country is in a world of hurt, in a very, very bad place. People are upset about the potential that he's going to nominate a Supreme Court justice to replace Justice Kennedy. Well, let me tell you something. The next president of the United States, whoever serves after 2020, likely will have a chance to appoint two, if not three, additional Supreme Court justices. That is a big deal for the future of this country.
So just so I'm clear on this, being the lawyer for a porn star is now enough to be considered a run for president? I still like The Rock better. I say, you know, if I got to choose between the two, I'm going to go with The Rock. President Rock rather than President Avenatti. All right, well, listen, that's my big news. I don't know. Ryan's got some big news coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, how about this? Naperville's Rib Fest temporarily closed again. Yeah, we've got some good news, though, so stick around. I'll tell you what it is.
All right, well, hopefully there's good news in the traffic trouble spots. Somehow I doubt it with the title.
Mr. International.
You know it. Mr. Worldwide, Mr. 311.
I don't think that's it.
You don't think?
I think it's 305.
Mr. 305? Listen, I'm not up on my area codes, Violetta.
Pitbull.
I knew enough to know it was Mr. 3-something.
First 50 Cent to Ravinia, now Pitbull in Naperville.
I can't believe
Very
it.
Very fitting.
Pitbull can be anywhere,
give
though.
Give the people what they want.
You give the people what they want, and you know what they want on the 5th of July? Pitbull and ribs. That's it. I want to get slathered in sauce and dance.
He's
and
so get, good.
I want to get turnt. I want to so get crunk. Does he do anything other than they go, hey?
And he's got the high-waisted
pants.
Yeah,
he dances. He's like, he's a firecracker, okay? He's perfect for the 4th of July.
In Naperville. Nice, Violetta. Oh, they're gonna listen. They love him in Naperville.
Yeah,
yeah. Why would
I'm going out there? Is he gonna be there on Friday tomorrow?
No, he's a one night D. Comes
That's it?
In, he blows into Naperville,
Dang.
Sets it on fire, turns the place out, and then he's gone.
So now, do I let Violetta? What's your name again?
Just call me
goodness,
V, right?
We've only
Just
worked together
V.
for like 2 years.
Violet.
Yeah, whatever. So I've got some good news for you, Violetta.
Yes.
On if you are going Friday or Saturday, because the weather's been so problematic. Podromatic out there, they're actually reducing the prices for Friday and Saturday. So there you go.
I think that's I'm going to be out there Friday.
Yeah. Looks like we don't have to do headline news anymore because just blew it out right there.
Well, that's good because
I love getting information from him.
The top five is going to run till about 5:50.
Number three,
with the news of LeBron James signing with the Lakers, there's been some speculation as to what this means for Lonzo Ball and how the two will get along on the court. But according to Lonzo's father, the always soft-spoken LeVar, he says he thinks his son and James will work well together. In fact, he told TMZ he's excited to have LeBron.
I called LeBron to L.A. I knew he was coming to L.A.
And this week,
everything lined up for me. Didn't I tell y'all to call him L.A. LeBron? Some championships for the Lakers.
For the Lakers.
I'm telling y'all, man.
How many?
Hey, LeBron got a 4-year deal, right?
Yeah.
I hope he gets 4 in a row.
Yeah.
But if not, I guarantee 2 when all my boys is on the Lakers with him.
No.
Game over. The Warriors can sign Boogie, Prince, Michael Jordan, anybody they want. They still ain't going to win with this team right here. Lakers with LeBron. You don't give my son the best player in the game. Don't think he's going to win no championships.
Is that Kenan Thompson? Because Kenan Thompson does a wonderful LeVar Ball. And well, now I know just how well Kenan Thompson does.
I feel so bad for his boys.
Yeah,
have to deal with it and look at their idiot dad on TV. And honestly, all three of the kids have pretty much handled it about as well as you can.
Yeah, you can. You,
like,
you
there goes idiot dad again on national television.
Do you think they,
Lonzo's on LA.
Right. Do you think Lonzo's camp leaked his, that was the big speculation today, that they leaked his injury to keep the Lakers from, make it harder for the Lakers to trade him because he wants to stay in LA and play with LeBron?
Sure, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I don't, I don't put anything past LeVar. LeVar's got, he's got an agenda. And according to, before LeVar started yapping, LeBron said he's fine playing with this kid. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see another super team being built.
Number two.
Ready to feel old, Violetta?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, Katy Perry. This week marks the 10th anniversary of Katy Perry's I Kissed a Girl topping
she
the Billboard
sang the song?
Top 100. Yes.
That was her first big hit.
Yes, first big hit for Katy Perry.
Huh. Hello. Don't you remember 7th grade?
I thought it was somebody else. I don't know why.
It was a catchy, controversial 2008 tune laid the groundwork for Katy's future chart success. Which now includes 9 number one hits. Back then, Katy was coy about whether that song was inspired by a real life experience.
Whoa.
Oh, playing it coy. Whoa.
Isn't she the daughter of a pastor? Wasn't that kind of
sure.
the thing?
Oh, yeah,
she
remember the good old days when that was the national controversy?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Just about a song about kissing a girl.
Did Katy Perry really kiss a girl? That dominated the front page
different
for
times.
Weeks.
Yeah.
Now we don't know. Well, here's what she told reporters in 2008 all about that.
What inspired the song is like, you read in your magazines, you see Angelina Jolie and Natalie Portman and Giselle Bunchkin and all these beautiful girls, and you ask yourself, all right, if one of these girls would to walk into the room, there'd be no doubt in your mind, male or female, if they asked you to kiss them, you probably would pucker up. I think that I do sing for my age group, and I think that age group is a little bit more mature, and I welcome parents to watch out for whatever they want to expose their children to.
Her age group's mature. I thought this was targeted towards like third graders.
She danced with sharks at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Well, how mature is that?
Sharks live to be very old, Ryan.
Sharks are
I don't know if you know that. Sharks live to be, I don't know, 80. I have no idea. It sounds good enough. How old? Because that 10 years ago, she was young when that song came out. So I don't know what the age group was back then for what Katy's target demo was. Violetta, what was Katy Perry's target demo a decade ago?
I mean, I think it was eighth graders, middle schoolers.
Who are very mature.
Well, you're playing Spin the Bottle. You never know what it's going to land on.
Whoa.
Look at, wow. Yeah, do you want to share, Violetta? Are you
no, being coy? Just like Katy Perry, I don't kiss and tell.
You're being very coy.
Actually, no, wait. No, 10 years ago, I was not that young. I was, it's in high school. I think it was like early high schoolers.
Okay,
Katy Perry's 33 right now.
So she was
23 at the time.
Mm-hmm. And her audience...
I mean, I was in high school.
See, I always thought her audience was geared much younger.
She was like fifth graders.
Yeah,
like
she
girls.
Was... Especially when she came out, and that's what made the song such a... You know,
it's a summer jam. You guys are overthinking it.
Yeah. No, listen, I enjoyed it.
Put on some cherry chapstick and relax.
Listen, if I had some, I'd kiss a girl right now.
I love cherry chapstick.
I liked it. Every time I've done it, I've liked it. Even the girl with halitosis and the gum disease, I liked it. I didn't care. I did not care at all.
You'll take what you can get.
I'll take it.
Violetta, you said a mouthful right there. You take what you can get.
Number one.
Speaking of a mouthful, Jay Cutler won't say whether or not he is officially retired from football. He's playing coy like Katy Perry. Not even to his wife, Kristen Cavallari. In a recent teaser for Very Cavallari, a reality show on E! That focuses on Cavallari's life as an entrepreneur, Cutler contemplates his impending retirement.
Why are you so dressed up?
To work? What's on tap for you today?
I've got a big 2:30 appointment.
Picking up boys from school.
You have the boys at school.
Uh-huh.
Want to be first in line.
Always.
Beat all the other moms there.
But like honestly, what do you do all day?
I like to keep myself pretty free. So if something does pop up, bounce right into it.
Wow, that is the most inane conversation I have ever heard. And I've been married for 26 years, and we've had some inane conversations in those years. Nothing like that, and thank God my wife doesn't do that. Oh, that vocal fry thing.
Which episode do they vaccinate the kids? They're non-vaxxers.
I don't know.
You know, the funny thing is Jay really is like, what, one starting quarterback ACL tear away from getting back into the league?
Yeah,
I mean, is that fair to say?
I
mean,
I don't know, but yeah, but hasn't, I thought he officially retired when he took
that phone never
come out. Yeah,
you'd never turn off the phone.
Someone calls with a $10 million contract. Okay.
I wonder if he's still working out, if he's still in shape.
He was never all in that great shape. He always looked like he kind of had a beer belly going on.
He took a little time off during this season. All right. Well, that seems to be, let me see.
The top five at five.
Bad timing for the
cough. Poor timing on the cough.
Yeah, that's
didn't know the on button was on.
Listen, once the music comes on, everything's hot. We come in hot. It's Brian Noonan in for Roe and Anna. Kevin has come into the studio because anytime there's golf-related conversation, Kevin has to be in
and
the
I
room.
Smelled food. Yes, so, like a bear going after a campsite, I smelled food and I wandered over here.
You came
it just happened
in,
to be a golf segment.
That's it. I didn't hang the food up in a bag in a tree, so now you're in. Jimmy Cockless is here. He is the food and beverage director at Mistwood Golf Club in Romeoville. Yesterday, they attempted to break a world record, lining up hot dogs. Now, Jimmy, welcome, first of all.
You have me.
You're welcome. I have to ask, one, how did you become aware of this world record, and why would you say, you know what, we got to break this world record, the world record of laying out hot dogs?
Well, I'll tell you why. We were in a meeting. We were celebrating 20 years of Mistwood Golf Club this year. Okay. So we do a Stars and Stripes tournament every year on the 4th of July. Brings a huge crowd. Great golf course. You know, you've played it, so you know it.
Yeah.
And
Only the course, but the complex as a whole. Big Wesley's Tavern, even if you don't play golf, the fitting areas, the bays you guys have, awesome place.
Yeah, we did it right for sure. And kudos to Jim McQuethy for making that happen. But we're sitting in a meeting. We want to do something crazy. So,
okay.
Obviously, hot dogs are the fun food for the month of July. And somebody said it about, you know, why don't we try and break a Guinness Book of World Record? There's got to be a record out there for hot dogs.
Sure.
So I Googled it, right? And we found the longest line of hot dogs. What I found interesting was it was a gentleman in Japan that held that record. And I thought, that's crazy.
That's got to be an American record.
That's nuts. Absolutely should be in America. So we decided, you know what? Mr. Wood is going to bring this record back to America.
So it's got to be when you it's easy to say, yeah, we're going to set a record. We're going to line up, over 2,000 hot dogs. It's good on paper, but logistically, it's got to be a nightmare. First of all, finding the hot dogs. But there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through for Guinness, right, to make sure that you're an accredited, that this is a real world's record.
Yeah, so I applied for this in early March of 2018. The application process took 12 weeks. Actually, at the 14th week is when I got the email that they stated, hey, we're going to accept your application. You now have a year to attempt this record and try and break it.
Okay.
And then they sent me the Bible of what we can and can't do. And it was about 43 pages long. So we had to read, through everything. Yeah, it was nuts.
All right. What kind of rules are there for the lining up the hot dog world record? It would seem pretty self-explanatory. Put a hot dog, then put another one at the end of that one, and you just keep going.
Sounds simple. It does sound simple. But, hot dog can't be more than 7 inches.
Ah, right.
So things like that. You have to use the bun. It has to be consumable. So at the end of the attempt, it has to be cooked to temperature so that way we can give them out to the crowd that was there to eat them. That was one of the crazy rules. And then evidence, just the amount of evidence that we had to secure for me to submit to them now on Monday was nuts. Photographs, videos, crowd pictures, witness statements. We actually had to bring an architect who's a certified structural engineer to do the measuring because they wanted somebody with that type of background for the measurement.
So logistically, this is obviously a very complicated record to break. I mean, how did this go down? Was it down a stretch of fairway with a bunch of tables lined together? How did you actually piece this whole puzzle together?
Yeah, so hole number three is probably our coolest hole, in my opinion. Great backdrop of our brand new clubhouse. Great backdrop of our performance center. There's a huge lake right next to that hole. So we decided we're going to go from tee to green. That distance was about 1,640 feet. Okay. So we figured, the record's 1,157 feet. We have the area to perform this. And then from there, just logistically, we had to put this on tables, right? You couldn't just lay them in the grass.
Yeah.
Line them up and be done. Right. You have to pick them up and eat them. So, renting tables, we partnered with Vienna Beef, so they helped us and hooked us up with some hot dogs.
Now, where were you able to, obviously you have a tavern at Mistwood. Mm-hmm. Do you have the facilities to cook that many hot dogs? How long a process was that just to get them all to temperature?
Yeah, we have a great facility. McCarthy's Tavern is a great restaurant in the clubhouse. Our executive chef team, Chef Dan Casey was the man that tackled this feat, but he started, just the prep work on Sunday of last week, to make this happen on Wednesday. And I think it took him about 6.5 hours, 7 hours to actually wrap all of them individually.
Wow.
So shout out to our
sous chef,
Bobby
Brooks. Dogs was it total again?
It was 2,496. So 2,496 hot dogs.
That's amazing.
And how many were consumed? Were you guys able to take them down?
We were. So there was probably anywhere from 100, 200 people out there. So a lot of them ate them. But whatever was left over, we donated to a mission in Joliet.
Perfect. Right. Yeah. Jimmy Cockless is here. He's the food and beverage director of Mistwood Golf Club. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll go through what happened yesterday, the nuts and bolts of setting this world record, and I want to know if you've heard anything from Japan, because we know sometimes people, they lose a world record, they get a little cranky. So we'll get into all of that. Mistwood Golf Club, of course, is in Romeoville. You can go to Kevin. Kevin speaks very highly if you're looking
great
for a place
spot.
To play
great
play
spot to get golf. Fitted, too. If you're new to the game and you want some new clubs, they have a premier fitting facility, one of the best in all of Illinois.
See, that's always been my issue, because being
tall guy, you need a professional fit job.
I probably do.
Mistwood will hook you up.
I'm always topping the ball.
Yeah,
because I always blamed it on my clubs being too short.
No, I'll stick with that one.
Too fat to bend over. either way, we'll talk more with Jimmy in a minute. But first, let's find out what Ryan's got at the top of the hour news.
Authorities in Thailand still trying to figure out how to get to those soccer players and their coach trapped in that flooded cave.
Thank you, Ryan. And now it's time for Violetta's Traffic Trouble Spot, sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
We'll be right back.
Listen to Steve Cochran tomorrow at 7:20 for your chance to win free 4-pack of tickets to the Blackhawks convention. All right, Brian in for Ro and Anna. Yesterday at Mistwood Golf Club in Romeoville, a world record was attempted. Jimmy Coakless is the food and beverage director, or Coakless is the food and beverage director at Mistwood Golf Club. The world record, lining up hot dogs, which, again, one, I can't believe there's a world record. Somebody had, I've done more of this than anybody else in the world. And for you to find it and then say, you know what, we're going to beat that record. Because it's America.
Absolutely.
And we've got to bring the hot dog lining record back to America. Take it from Japan. We don't need this. So, all right, you already said there were over 2,400 hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You've got them cooked. Your staff at the restaurant is cooking them and wrapping. That had to be, I can only imagine the chef's assistants going, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I got to wrap hot dogs for 8 hours.
I'm shocked they showed up this morning.
Oh, I wouldn't have come back.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd had paper cuts all over me from wrapping these hot dogs. So yesterday morning dawns. Walk us through how the day goes.
Yeah, so we walk up to hole number 3, and we see this massive amount of 8-foot tables that we had to set up, which itself was daunting. It took us an hour and a half to set up a stream of tables from, like I said, from the tee to the green.
Okay.
From there, it was just a matter of, you know, waiting for this Stars and Stripes tournament to finish and then get the hot dogs out there. And as soon as we started rolling out the hot boxes with the chefs, we got rain, of course.
Oh,
so,
no.
We are on a little 10-15 minute wait for the rain to pass. And then from there, it was kind of all hands on deck, right?
Yeah. Is there anything in the rules that says one person has to line them up, or can as many people, since you have to keep the hot dogs up to temperature, mm-hmm. is everybody just grabbing them and putting them down?
Yeah, we encouraged the crowd that was there to get involved, you know, so we passed out hot dogs, they were lining them up, and myself and my chef team were behind them, you know, making sure that they were all touching correctly
okay.
and, you know, following all the rules that we read about for so long. So, took us, we started right around 2:30, I would say. Took us close to 4, almost an hour and a half to get them all perfect and situated.
Now, are you having to, you talked about video evidence and stuff. Are you having to go down the line so that Guinness can see each hot dog touching the next hot dog, that there were no gaps?
Yeah, lots of continuous shots in their rule. So video evidence, photographic evidence, all different angles, but continuous shots of things. So when we were setting them, we needed a continuous shot. When we were actually doing the official measuring, we needed continuous shots from different angles so that they saw that this stream of hot dogs is really a stream of hot dogs, right? And we got some great drone footage that's up on our website, mistwoodgc.com, that you can take a look at and see this massive line of hot dogs.
It's very cool, and I'm thinking, all right, you measured the hot dogs beforehand, you go, all right, you make your estimate, this is how long it's going to be, but things don't always go in reality as they do on paper, right?
They do not, and we found that out almost the hard way yesterday. So, as I said, Vienna Beef, you know, donated, super cool guys to donate the hot dogs for us. We use a 6-inch hot dog.
Okay.
Obviously, basic math tells us, you know, 6 inches times 1,200 feet equals this amount of hot dogs. And we had 2,500 hot dogs to do this, thinking we had 100 more than we actually needed.
Right.
That was far from the truth, because when
really?
We got about halfway and the hot dogs were spread to the end, we had a lot of chatter going on in the background of people saying, hey, we're going to be short, you know, 8 to 10 tables on this thing.
No.
So I start sweating. I try to, you know, hold my composure, but I was sweating.
Oh.
My chef was sweating. And then, you know, just obviously we didn't account for shrinkage of the hot dog.
Classic shrinkage.
Yeah,
plastic wraps,
shrinkage.
You know. Yeah, always the shrinkage, right? But we didn't account for a lot of
the
stuff.
Was it cold outside?
Well, you know, it was steamy.
Sometimes the steam will do it too, Violetta.
Yeah.
Your hot dog just gets wrapped up, it gets too hot, and then shrinks down a little bit.
So then what did you guys do? How'd you get the extra hot dogs?
Good question.
We actually did not end up needing the extra hot dogs. So we were planning on breaking the record by just about 50 or 60 feet.
Okay.
And we actually just broke it by 5 feet.
Ooh.
So we cut it close. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there had been some mini mart.
Could have been a crisis.
Dogs.
Well, I think America's in a much, much better place now that the record's home.
Correct.
I feel
better.
We took it from Japan. It's
we
back
did.
At its rightful place here in America.
Exactly. We needed to have that hot hot dog lineup record.
I feel better walking around knowing that that record is back towards in America. I feel better. So thank you. You did a patriotic service to your country.
Your chest was a little more puffed up today than usual. You had a little pride in your step when you came in. I know it had something to do with the record being broken.
I mean, every time you bite into a hot dog now, you can be like, yeah,
that's right.
We hold that record.
We hold that record.
Do you have any interest in biting into a hot dog after witnessing that? That is my question.
I'm already halfway deep on this hot dog.
Yeah, I'm
to answer your question, yes, I do.
As soon as you start the news, I'm biting into a hot dog. I'm not going to Joey Chestnut it, but I'm gonna enjoy a fine Vienna beef hot dog. So now, with only that much of a cushion, are you afraid that this guy in Japan now is sitting with one of those bonsai headbands, just rubbing his hands together, going, oh, I'm going to get those
nemesis.
Your nemesis. He's like the Lex Luthor of hot dog lining, and he's coming to get you.
Nakayushu Kubato. Of Japan. That's his name.
That
he's
is
coming
his name.
For you.
That is his name. We need to track this guy. We need to figure this out. You know, we need to know what he's doing.
Get some surveillance camera.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, the drone ones they have over
something.
Bases. Yeah.
Right. We need to know
what he's up to. See what Kubota is up to.
Because you've got to imagine, if you break that record, you're sitting in Japan going, nobody's going to try to break this record. Who would try to break this record?
But also, America's the only country that would care to, like,
exactly.
Nobody in Japan's like, what? Who cares? Everyone here is like, that's right, bring the hot dog record back.
Exactly. Right. You get a bunch of people sitting around at Mistwood Golf Club one day going, this is not, this is an abomination.
That's almost how it happened.
National identity. We have to get this record back.
That's almost how it happened. Our chef was determined. As soon as I threw that out there, it was kind of a collaboration of, you know, we have to bring this back.
Great service to your country, Jim.
So how long does it take for this to be certified? Because we know you broke it. Mm-hmm. This guy, this Giacomosho or whatever his name is in Japan, he may protest it. But how long before Guinness actually says, you know what, Jimmy and your crew at Mistwood, here you go. Here's the, what do you get, a plaque? You get a
we'll
trophy?
Get an official,
you get a hot dog?
Yeah,
what do you have?
Well, hopefully not a hot dog, but Guinness Book of World Record plaque for sure, you know, with Mistwood Golf Club name on it. Yeah, it takes about 12 weeks after we submit evidence, and then we wait around. Probably going to be in London in about a month. So maybe walk over to the offices, you know, and knock on the door and say, you know, this guy broke that hot dog record and brought it back to America.
Let us know when it's certified.
We absolutely will.
Because we need to...
cheers with hot dogs.
It's going to be exciting. So now, it's almost, what do you do at Mistwood to follow this up? Sure, you got a great golf course. People come out there. Kevin's been raving about all the amenities. But this has to be, you know, now it's the 5th of July. You've broke this record. You go, oh.
It's becoming a destination.
Yeah, now what am I going to do?
On a road trip. Well, we're going to stop at Mistwood to see the Guinness Book of World Record hot dog holders.
That's right.
We have a great course. You know, we do a lot of cool social events throughout the months, whether it's, you know, nine-hole golf outing with beer on every hole or beer dinners or wine dinners.
Nice.
We do a lot of cool social events. We try and get the community to come out to the golf course. We are a public course. We have that private feel, so people think that
100%
they can't
feels like
out,
a country club, no question.
For sure, yeah, it's great. It's a great environment. We have a great team, great staff.
Well, that's a nice
help.
Thing, too, because people think, you know, the old thinking of public courses is just that they're kind of, you know, they're there, and it's good if you want to just knock around. That's great. But it's nice to have a public course that has the amenities that, you know, most people wouldn't have access to because they're not going to country.
For sure. You mentioned fittings earlier, right? I mean, Chris Iriadi and Eric Russell, our two fitters, do a fantastic job in our performance center. State of the art, anything you can possibly imagine to, you know, obviously not hit the go over your hit.
So
get out there and get a fitting set up.
I need a long club so I don't have to bend over.
That's right.
Jimmy Cockles is the food and beverage director for Mistwood Golf Club, mistwoodgc.com. You can see all the footage. Congratulations on the world record. This is very impressive. And God bless America and God bless Mistwood Golf Club.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jim.
That's right.
Time to eat some hot dogs. Are we done with the segment yet? I'm hungry now, Brian.
Please go ahead. I'm just going to introduce the news. You can chow down. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users rather, just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Deck Tech. It is 6 o'clock, and with the news, here's Ryan Burr. Ooh, more Katy Perry for the kids. 10 years ago, I Kissed a Girl came out, Rich. I don't know if you knew that. I don't know if you follow Katy Perry's career as closely as some people do.
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Everybody thought that was like a novelty hit, that she'd be like a one-hit wonder.
Now she's a superstar.
Like Four Non-Blondes or something like that, you know.
Wow.
Juliana Hatfield, all talented, but, you know, they didn't have a ton of singles,
right? No.
And it was just the beginning for Katy.
It's all that cherry lip gloss. It propelled her.
Chapstick.
Her. Oh, okay.
It made it more innocent. It wasn't even lip gloss.
Yeah. Okay. Violetta, the head of the Katy Perry Defense Fund.
Well, you realize if that song came out now, there would be protests about it because they'd be sure. Like, you know, either you're bisexual or lesbian or trans, cis, positive right. or not. Don't just say you kissed a girl and yes. you liked it. Did you really like it? Or are you dabbling?
We need your pronouns. Don't dabble.
Yeah, there's what are no you dabbling? Telling the kids?
Experiments are for science because you remember every woman said, oh, well, I experimented in college.
Everybody, yeah, there was a time when everybody talked about experimenting.
Well, women always say they experimented in college. If guys did it, then they were just gay. That was always the thing. I mean, come on, let's be honest. And if a guy said he experimented in college, that meant he tried two different strains of marijuana and mixed right. them in a bud that looked like, you know, Jethro Tull cover out.
Just doing some experiments, man.
Hey, man. I'm just hydroponic. Sorry.
Experiment over here.
Yeah, exactly.
I was mixing up punch in my laundry hamper. There that was go. The big experiment. It's the summer. That means every weekend we are chock full of movies.
Yes, sir.
And we never miss out on a chance to have another superhero movie.
I'm glad to talk to you about this one, my friend. It's kind of under the radar, if you will, as far as these huge movies goes. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp. And
I will say I loved the original Ant-Man.
Yeah, Ant-Man. And Paul Rudd, I think, is a perfect casting for that because Paul Rudd is one of the more likable actors out there. And he has that everyman quality. And that's the thing about Ant-Man. Ant-Man's kind of in the same vein as Spider-Man, where he has absolutely no superpowers until he puts on the suit. So he's still a regular guy. It's not like Thor or Superman, where they're always superheroes, whether they're wearing costumes or not, right? So in this one, the Wasp is played by Evangeline Lilly, who was the daughter of Michael Douglas' character in the first one. And they pick up the action now. And this is pretty cool, too, because if you're a big Avengers fan, you might remember that Captain America actually recruited Ant-Man for Avengers for Civil War, for Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
And he was very excited to meet all those guys, you know. But this picks up the story a few years later because he's under house arrest because he violated the International Superhero Treaty, that whole thing. Who knew?
Yeah,
so he actually has an ankle monitor. And he could shrink down to the size of an ant, but he doesn't want to risk getting in trouble with the government again.
Sure, yeah.
So he's just at home. But then, you know, duty calls. And the main story here is Michael Douglas as the original kind of genius scientist who invented the Ant-Man, you know, technology where you could shrink down to that, you know, tiny level. He wants the help of Ant-Man. They are going to try to rescue Michael Douglas's wife, which would be the Wasp's mother.
Okay.
Who is Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie.
Oh, really?
Who is only, you know, we did not see her in the first movie, but it turns out that she's been deep in the vortex all these years, like all shrunken down, the other realm, if you will, the quantum realm.
Yes.
And they keep talking about the quantum realm. And at one point, it's great because Ant-Man just says, you guys just say quantum before everything. And then I'm supposed to like believe you, right? And what I liked about this one, Bri, is that it's a lot lighter and breezier than some of the other heavy superhero movies because it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's all about the fact that he can shrink way, 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 way down.
Yeah.
But then he can become really super giant as well. But they could do the same thing with inanimate objects. So they've got a Hot Wheel Rally case. Remember the Hot Wheel Rally case? It looked like a tire.
Yep. And it's got all the cars.
And they could just pick a car from the Hot Wheel and it'll become automatically it becomes the full size version of that lime green
32
Ford Vicky, you know? So it's a lot of fun. It's mostly fun, you know.
Well, the first one was a lot of fun too. I mean it had the superhero and crime element, and there was the villain and all that, but there was still an underlying level of laughs. His friends were all goofy, and so you enjoy, it was a lot of fun,
exactly. And the story's all about, you know, the obligatory arms dealer who wants to get a hold of the lab that Michael Douglas's character has, you know. So it's not about somebody coming from an intergalactic thing and trying to destroy the world. It's a crime caper like you used to see a lot in the comic books back in the day, you know, where it was just kind of a self-contained thing. There's references, of course, to the bigger universe because he keeps bragging about the fact that, like, he goes, you know, Captain America told me to call him Cap. We're pretty close now. And it exists on the timeline. I don't want to give anything away, but you have to stick around. It does exist on the timeline of the current Avengers movie.
Okay.
Infinity Wars, which was the most recent one. And for people who saw what happened in that movie, let's just say that this movie kind of is happening in a parallel world. It's happening in San Francisco while their battles were going on in Wakanda and elsewhere, but it's happening at the same time. And it all ties together at one point. So I'm giving 3.5 stars to Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I love the casting. I mean, first of all, Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer, come on, you know, royalty. And then Evangeline Lilly, people might remember she was on Lost and a lot of other things. And she's really good with Paul Rudd. And I love Paul Rudd. I still want to see a Bobby Newport movie, for those of you that watch Parks and Rec. He was the Sweetums heir who ran against, who was literally the dumbest, nicest person ever.
I like him too, and I liked, as I said, I liked the original. Now, with this doesn't spoil anything, mm-hmm. because I was very disappointed at the end of Deadpool 2 that there was not the post-credits scene, the add-on that all Marvel movies have. Does Ant-Man and the Wasp have that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to stick around. There's usually one right at the end of the credits when people are still in the theater, and then you got to wait through the list of the 47,000 people who worked on the movie.
You know what? But I think that's good. It's good for people to see that, because a lot of times we talk about piracy and all that. You don't realize how many people work on a movie.
It's incredible.
You sit through all the credits and go,
it's incredible.
God.
Especially, I think the Pixar films have the longest list.
It's insane.
The only people that really don't love it are the cleaning crews at the movies, because they have to wait for everyone to get out of there, because Americans, of course, are slobs. Yes. Unlike you saw the Japanese soccer fans who cleaned up the locker room, the stands, and everything.
Perfect.
I would hereby suggest that we start doing that, but I know I'm going to get no traction with that.
Well, if you stay around to the end to see those things, carry your garbage out.
Be nice.
Help out the kids who are working.
Listen, if you just gently put your soda down on the ground next to your chair, that's one thing. But I don't know how, but so much popcorn gets spilled.
People are very excited.
I think that might be it.
They're just throwing popcorn like they're having some sort of spasm.
I think that's what it is.
All right, now the next one, I've seen some of the trailers. This, Sorry to Bother You, looks kind of odd. Weird.
It is very strange.
It's like hard to comprehend.
A lot of people are
going to
compare it to Get Out, because it is a race-based social satire set in kind of a realistic world where things really go crazy. And that's a legitimate concern. I don't think it's as good. I'm giving it 3 stars. I do like, part of the premise here, though, is that this guy's working. He's a young black guy. He's trying to find a good job. He's really been struggling. So he gets a job at the telemarketing firm. But he's not really making a lot of sales. So he's at his desk there, and next to him is Danny Glover, the character played by Danny Glover, and he gives him a little bit of advice.
Hey, young blood, let me give you a tip. Use your white voice.
Man, I ain't got no white voice.
Oh, come on, you know what I mean. You have a white voice in there, you can use it. It's like being pulled over by the police.
Oh, no, I just use my regular voice when that happens. I just say, back the fuck up off the car, and don't nobody get
out. All right, man, I'm just trying to give you some game. You want to make some money here? Then read the script with a white voice.
People say I talk with a white voice anyway, so why ain't it helping me out?
Well, you don't talk white enough. I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife. I'm talking about the real deal. Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regalview. I didn't catch you at the wrong time, did I?
and as you can imagine, that's Steve Buscemi. All of a sudden, Danny Glover starts talking, but we hear Steve Buscemi's voice. And Lakeith Stanfield, who plays the lead there, when he talks, all of a sudden, he sounds like Patton Oswalt.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
Like, when another black character talks in his white voice, he sounds like David Cross. So, like, the whitest kind of comic voices. And, of course, they start making more sales because, you know, and it does, it's a dark comedy in a lot of ways, and it's a sharp-edged satire. But it does make a point where, let's face it, when you get a telephone call, you immediately identify the person, and you think that's a man or a woman, but you also somewhere think that sounds like a white person, that sounds like a black person, that sounds like a person of Hispanic heritage. You just do.
Yeah,
you can't pretend like
there's
no difference
tones
there.
And voices and different cadence.
So it's really funny when these guys start, you know, hello, Mr. Johnson, how are all your needs for household goods? And then all of a sudden the people on the other end, well, tell me more, young man. You sound like, as opposed to when he first called up, and they're like, I'm not interested, boom. And then it goes crazier than that. It gets really, really dark and weird and sci-fi and creatures. And I'll just say 3 stars. I think some people are going to love it, and some people are going to walk out, but take a chance on it.
All right, so Sorry to Bother You and Ant-Man and the Wasp, big hits. Richard Roper is here. We've got another movie and then a limited TV show on HBO that we're going to get to.
Cool.
But first, we have to find out what Ryan's got at the bottom of the hour.
Well, the Indiana governor has spoken when it comes to the attorney general allegations against the attorney general of groping a state lawmaker. We'll have more on that coming up.
All right, traffic trouble spots, Violetta. Chicago's hosting the ultimate month-long food festival this August. Visit ctfoodbowl.com to get your seat at the table. Richard Roper is in the studio. We've talked about Ant-Man and the Wasp. We talked about Sorry to Bother You. And what's next on the big list?
Let's talk a little bit about the Whitney Houston documentary that's coming out. It's just called Whitney. And some people might be thinking, wait a minute, wasn't there a documentary last year? There was a Whitney Houston documentary. And there was a bad Lifetime movie a few years before that. But this is the definitive documentary about Whitney Houston. The family, the estate, participated, so you have access, the filmmaker has access to all kinds of, you know, behind the scenes footage, her two brothers, her mother, A lot of close family friends, even Bobby Brown, they all participated in this documentary.
Okay.
But it's not just a washed over, you know, glossed over look at her life. It's a beautiful chronicle of Whitney Houston's life, growing up in Newark, New Jersey, and coming from, of course, this kind of singing royalty family. Her mother, Sissy Houston, her husband was Dionne Warwick, and her learning to sing in a church and all through her meteoric rise. But it also talks a lot about the dark side. And we see, unfortunately, I mean, I think this film is really exhilarating at times and then absolutely heartbreaking. And we had a clip here. This is a very close family friend talking about when she first kind of hooked up with Bobby Brown, and it first seemed like a good thing, and she was in love and got married, and then part of the reason why it fell apart.
That's my sister-in-law. This is Bobby. Whether you know it or not, yeah, it's me.
She was the superstar, and he had a couple of hits, so kind of equal, close enough. And then The Bodyguard hit. And she shot up into the stratosphere, and he knew instinctively he would never get there. And he just kind of shut down.
When you got people in the media talking about Mr. Houston instead of Mr. Brown, you know, instead of saying, like I say, f*** him, he let it get to him.
Can I just ask you real quick, Miss Houston?
Money.
Mrs. Brown, man.
Mrs. Houston Brown.
Yes, darling.
Ooh.
You could see the ego there. Yeah. And no one ever called her Whitney Brown, thank God.
No.
And there's a real telling moment in this documentary, too. And people might not remember this, but you know, when Whitney Houston, when she had become a superstar, Al Sharpton and others started protests against her, saying she had become too white, too mainstream. Yes. They called her Whitey Houston. And she got booed at an awards ceremony, BET, where, and she was shocked. And at that same awards ceremony, Bobby Brown, at that time, was hot. And he came out and did his bad boy routine, and was the crowd loved him. And the theory, you know, kind of espoused by this movie is that's when she decided, you know what, I need to be with someone like that. You know, so that people understand. Yeah, exactly. And, they were adults. They were both responsible. But, you know, the enabling that went on both ends. I'm giving this film 3.5 stars.
Okay.
I think, first of all, you know, people need to see what happened. She was only 48 years old when she died.
Amazing.
And she had been through so many ups and downs. But it's also great, the beginning of the film, when we see when she was 18 years old, her first TV appearance on the Merv Griffin Show.
Okay.
She's 18.
Oh, my God.
And she just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
And, you know, and at that moment, you know that you're seeing a world-class generational talent. And then all those great 80s videos they play and her live concert appearances. The Star Spangled Banner, of course, after the Persian Gulf War, people remember that. And that's a great story because she wanted to do something like Marvin Gaye had done with the NBA All-Star Game. So one of her arrangers, they actually put together a different arrangement. I mean, it's done in a different cadence and sent it to her. And she didn't even bother to listen to it. She goes, I'll listen to it once before I go on. She listened to it backstage, went out there and nailed it.
Wow.
She had that kind of talent.
Led to her downfall.
Oh, and we see some horrible home movie footage, and we see her falling apart, and we see the interviews that just went so sideways with Diane Sawyer and Oprah, where, you know, the crack is whack, and then she tried to make a comeback, and she was booed off the stage practically in Australia, so it's sometimes tough to sit through, but ultimately, it's a reminder of what a great talent she was.
Very nice. All right, and finally, we only have a couple minutes left because baseball is coming up, but HBO does some wonderful things. And I love Amy Adams, and she is in a new limited series on HBO.
You are correct, sir. Sharp Objects, and if you were a fan of Big Little Lies, the limited edition,
really,
you know, miniseries on HBO with Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman, this is the same director.
Okay.
That did that, has directed every episode of Sharp Objects. It's eight episodes. They sent me 7. They wouldn't send me the last one, so I didn't spoil the ending, but they sent me 7. And I can say it's every bit as good. And Sharp Objects is based on a novel by Gillian Flynn, who's from Chicago, who, of course, wrote Gone Girl, which became a huge movie hit. This was her first novel. Amy Adams plays a reporter in St. Louis who goes to a small town in Missouri where she grew up, where there's a possible serial killer at large. Oh. And then once she gets knee deep into that small town life, you understand why she wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
Because more bad stuff happens in a small town. Let's put it this way. This is the kind of small town in southern Missouri, like every year they celebrate Calhoun Day, and he's a Confederate general. And everybody still dresses up in their Confederate outfits.
There's something underneath.
And there's a big statue of General Calhoun in the town square. And she's like kind of horrified.
Oh,
and they're like, well, it's a town tradition. And the school play is all about the women who, you know, fended off the northern attackers. and wow. slit their throats, so they got, like these 12-year-old oh, sure. girls. And then the Northern Army came in and tried to rape us and pillage us, but we shot them dead, you know. But it's also, it's very dark and interesting. And Amy Adams, well, I guarantee you will get an Emmy nomination really? For this. Absolutely. Sharp Objects premieres Sunday night, HBO. Right.
I got to record that. Patricia Clarkson is in it.
Yeah,
she's
plays
fantastic.
Amy Adams' mom. And if you don't know her, you'll know her when you see her. Yeah. She's a great actress. And Chris Messina, who's been in a lot of things, plays a detective. Casting is, it's one of those movies where, or series, I guess you say, where even if you don't know the names, you're like, I remember that guy from that movie. Oh, that guy. Oh, she's in this. Like, really cool.
And this sounds like one of those things where it's better that it's in one of these eight-part
yes,
limited
think so.
Things than trying to jam it into a two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour
movie. It gives
it
a chance to breathe. And there's a lot of flashbacks to Amy Adams' childhood. And the young actress who plays Amy Adams as a child is the same actress who played the little girl in It, the
Ooh,
movie It.
Okay.
And now in the sequel to It, Jessica Chastain is going to play the older version of this girl. So now this little girl has to do is play a young version of Bryce Dallas Howard, and she'll have played all the redheaded actresses
say,
as a girl.
All the redheads are getting work. It's good to see all
but,
the redheads
but, you know, she's
work.
Terrific in it, too. And it gives us a chance because they stretch it out. To really get to know a lot of the other characters who in the book might have gotten six pages, but here are really fully fleshed out characters. And the director who directed every episode of Big Little Lies and Sharp Objects is also a film director. He did Dallas Buyers Club. So
nice. We've
talked about this before. These TV shows are really one-hour movies that are put on television. They're shot like films, they look like films, and they feature A-list film actors and actresses. So Sharp Objects, check it out.
So check that out. Always good to see you, Rich.
Thank you for coming in.
All right, we've got to get out of here because it's almost time for Andy Mazur to start his pregame, which he will do after Ryan has the news. I will talk to you again tomorrow in for Ro and Anna. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. And that's it. We got to get out of here. So it is 6:30 on 720 WGN Chicago. Time for the news.